and welcome to this episode of Tones and Drones, an ambient music podcast. I'm Jason Miller, and the podcast is produced in the studios of Public Radio 91.3 KVLU. And on the show, I speak with musicians who work in the ever-expanding realm of ambient music. My guests on the podcast today are Philip Wilkerson and Chris Russell. We're going to be talking about their life in music and also their collaboration called Dark Measures, an album that was released on the Spotted Peccary label. And beginning the program, actually, with a song called Evening's Embrace from the album. And as this podcast goes, you'll hear some other selections from the album. So it was really great to talk to them and really learn about their way of collaborating. And it gives some insight into how collaborations work when it comes to ambient music. So without further ado, my conversation with Philip Wilkerson and Chris Russell here on Tones and Drones. First of all, thank you both for being here on Tones and Drones.
Thank you.
Thanks for inviting us.
Oh, you're very welcome. I was looking at different places to start, and one of the things, the album's been, you know, it's been in on KVLU. So I wanted to ask you first, just starting out, ambient music known for a lot of collaborations, as we see a lot of artists that are solo artists. And so I wanted to start and just ask how y'all's collaboration came to be. Have y'all collaborated before Dark Measures?
Yeah, we did an album that was released in 2014 called Vague Traces. Okay. And I believe I had been listening to Philip for a little bit before that off of the stuff on that he was putting out on Bandcamp. Okay. And maybe through the Atmowork, it would have been the Relaxed Machinery community, I think. I don't know, it's a couple of years back, so I don't remember all the details. But yeah, I mean, it was really cool being able to work with him, and I really enjoyed working on that record. It was really well received too.
Okay, and so this is your second collaboration. Is this your first for the Spotted Peccary record label as collaboration, I should say.
Actually, both of them were released through Spotted Peccary.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we approached Spotted Peccary with it, and they were very excited to review it and said, yeah, we like it. And that was actually Chris's introduction to Spotted Peccary. I had been working with Spotted Peccary for a few years on a project called Time Being.
Yeah.
Time Being. And that okay. is a collaboration with Jordan Lake or Like. And so, yeah, to answer your question, the ambient collaborations, I think if you started looking on Spotify or started looking on Apple Music, I think you would see them. I think John Shanahan recently had a whole show where he did nothing but ambient collaborations, you know, so there was several tracks on that show. Spotted Peccary was very excited to release Vague Traces. And then they said, what's next?
Okay. Yeah. And Dark Measures. So, you know, mentioning that about collaborations and ambient music, one of the things that interests me is a couple of things. And one of them is actually like how you collaborate in this day and age. And as far as people who will just send pieces of music, just a drone, just parts, or people within, you know, multi-tracks. What was y'all's method of collaborating on this album?
Well, I got a batch of sounds from Philip, you know, and when from what I remember, when Dark Measures started, I tried to take a left turn and do things a little different than Vague Traces. And I kind of remember the early tracks having like more like textures and percussive like elements, and that just didn't really work. And so what it took for me was I had to actually go back and to listen to Vague Traces and to hear like, you know, what made that album work so well. Mm-hmm. And then I stripped everything back and really just kind of, found the flow again. And really happy with how it turned out.
One of the things about this one is that the layering is very distinct. The layering of sounds and the way the sounds ebb and flow, and being able to capture that in a collaboration like that, it's just to be able to have the sounds fit together that way. And what was some of your approaches to that? Are there similar software that you use, or is it the instruments that help with that? And as the composition's built, or?
Well, credit goes to Chris primarily for the mixes and the mix downs. Okay. And I primarily would supply him with tracks that I felt like had some potential and that sort of were in his, within his palette, so to speak, of sounds and range and so on. And I think that is really where the collaboration fits well together. It seems like we both kind of like the same textures and the same musical palette that we work together on. And I think that's what helps it mix together, but it's a lot of Chris's talent, basically just finding a sound that goes along with what I have supplied with him or to him, and finding a way to make it work.
Chris, Phil, we drop in here and whenever, when I want to, since we're all here on the Zoom together. Chris, I see the album Dark Measures, and I listen to the album, and I like to play through the discs on disc, in order on disc, and it's not necessarily in a lot of means a dark ambient album. That's the way it came across me.
Gray ambient.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You
know, I feel like this record is it's got like a nighttime vibe, but mm-hmm. I'd feel it's more maybe a gray ambient. It's mm-hmm. not real dark, it's darker than the music on Vague Traces, but yeah. It still has almost like a dreamlike, relaxing kind of quality to it. So I'll be honest with you, this record was the last project that I ever worked on before the whole COVID thing hit. Okay. So when this album was finished, the world was still normal.
Yeah, okay. And then it got a little bit definitely grayer in a lot of ways.
Yes, and I think if you look at the color palette and the textures and so on the album, I think it is very reflective of the sound of it. Mm-hmm. It's very subdued, and I think Chris described it perfectly by saying it's gray. It doesn't really fall deep into the dark zone, but it just sort of is right there on the edge of it, and I think that is really part of the beauty of the album that it takes you right to the edge of the abyss. And if you want to drop on in, come on in, the water's warm,
the warm water in the abyss.
Right.
It's like, I'm driving on Interstate 10 sometime on the way to Houston, and the sky is a darkish blue as you're going forward, but above that is these big heavy rain clouds sometime. And you know how you can see the rain in the distance, that fuzz, and yes. It's like, it's over there in the side. So it's like, you might drive into that dark storm, but you might not. You might just be staying the course, and that's just over here. You'd have to take a little mm-hmm. little detour to get into that, but it's still mm-hmm. you're not as gray as that almost black cloud that's slightly to the east of you.
And I think one of the things also about the sound of the overall album is that it's very welcoming. It pulls you in. It feels maybe a little darker and a little more somber than some of the light, bouncy kind of ambient that you might hear, or what is considered to be the really beautiful side of ambient music, where people are really exploring melody and things like that. And we're primarily letting you ride that drone with us, and really, really get in that mood with us and hold it out there and extend it and let you really, really ride along with us. And that's, I think we succeeded in that aspect of the album.
I really enjoy the way that this album ends, the last track, Faring Forward. I really I feel like we stuck the landing, we took everybody on this journey, and it's got a real beautiful ending to it. And sometimes that's always the highlight for me, is being able to open and close a record. I don't look at a project as one track. I always look at it, maybe, because I grew up with, CDs and records and stuff, but I look at it as the whole thing, and being able to come back full circle and have a strong ending.
Yes. That
look forward to what comes next, because we're working on the third album now, so I feel like it's opened the door up to where we're going on this third one. So that's a standout for me that I really enjoy.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. It's like films when they're going to a next movie, and the movie before the movie gives you like a direction for the next movie, because they know they're going to make the next movie, cinematically, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things I wanted to ask you, and I'd like to, let's on this program, we play excerpts from the pieces. And so, I'd like to go into Faring Forward, since you talked about that, and kind of do that right there. And I'll edit that in right here. And then we'll come back in a second as it is added in later. One of the songs that I wanted to ask you about because sometimes I'll hear a particular song in there and kind of want to use that one as maybe one to kind of focus on, then kind of also ask you what ones you want to talk about too. But the song before the penultimate song of Unbroken Devotion, now that particular song to me at the beginning of it, I thought I was hearing some kind of natural sounds in there, some kind of field sounds in there, but that one right there was just that one right there really it felt like a that one was the one that gave me like a feel of a string orchestra, an interesting chamber ensemble that was kind of navigating this ambient background. And I wanted to ask a bit about that track, because that one really grabbed me with the way it opened, and I'm trying to find out the landscape I'm in, and then here come the strings, in their motions, in their direction.
The strings, that was you, wasn't it, Philip?
I believe so. One of the things that occurred with this album was that there was a much more refined sense of the sounds being blended together as a unique sound, rather than it sounding a lot like, oh, well, that's Philip Wilkerson. You can tell that's him, and that's sort of his signature sound. And that's sort of Chris's signature sound on Vague Traces. It sounded very much like two artists working together. Mm. I think on this album, what you get is a whole lot more of, you really can't tell who's who. It's very, very well, very well blended, and very well, it comes across as the next step up, I think, in artist maturity, is that the sound is unified.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Rather than two separate artists.
In a couple of years that it, from what have been from 2014 to 19, so there was that gap, and we both released a lot of stuff in between, and I feel like for myself there was artistic growth, and I used totally different computer setup and software, and things were a lot different going into the second record for me.
I actually have difficulty distinguishing listening myself. Is that something that I contributed, or is that, what Chris has mixed in? So
Okay. Are there any, I'm curious about that as far as like sending the sounds and sharing the sounds. Like, do y'all have carte blanche for someone to take one of your sounds and affect it and stretch it or whatever different things to your sound, you know?
Yes. Yes. I have very specifically given Chris the freedom, you know, take this and blend it however you want to do it, cut it, slice it, you know, turn it up, turn it down, reverse it, inverse it, whatever you want to do with it. Just have fun with it.
You know,
a lot of times I don't really feel like it. You know, I like things so much that I really try to work around it. And, you know, I might maybe stretch it or pitch it just a little to match a drone or something that I'm working on. And, but for the most part, I mean, I don't like drown it out with a big long effects chain or anything. I, you know, usually I'm really happy with what I get from Philip. So, yeah.
And then the nice thing is, you know, he always gives it back to me, passes it back, and then I listen to it and kind of give it the blessing, so to speak, or the thumbs down. And, we do have some outtakes and some things that, we're like, yeah, you know, I don't know about that, but, you know, both of us felt like each track on this release was like a real winner, you know, and real keeper. There's nothing throwaway on this.
It's a seamless blend. But whoever wants to start, what's your background, y'all's background in music, and then how did you land on or evolve or however you want to say it into electronic music?
Chris, I'll let you go first.
Wow. Well, music has been in my family.
Okay.
And my parents had a real eclectic record collection. I remember being a little kid and, you know, I would geek out on the album covers. I'd play anything from like Tomita to Led Zeppelin, very young age. Seeing Eddie Van Halen on MTV as a toddler was influential. I started out as an aspiring guitar shredder. And then when I realized I wasn't going to be the next Joe Satriani, I just by chance was flipping through the radio dial and it came across Hearts of Space. Mm. I heard some tracks from World's Edge from Steve Roach. Yeah. And I think on that same program, I might have even heard something off Selected Ambient Works. From Aphex Twin. I had a cassette tape in. I actually have that recording of that first time I ever heard ambient. Because back then I would record off the radio. I don't know, the kids nowadays don't probably remember having to do that. But So there we go. So I went from the heavy music into ambient, and I just always liked the idea of one person creating a world with sounds and not being, you know, tied down to a band and all that. And into high school and in some of college, I performed with an industrial band for a while. But I'd say I stopped with the band stuff in 2009, and I just stayed with doing ambient. You know, and I miss performing, but I feel like I've accomplished way more by doing the ambient music, and it's been way more rewarding in the long run.
How are some of the things, Chris, that allowed you, technology wise, I guess, to say, to become, like you mentioned, you know, to be able to create the soundscape yourself? Because that's something that drew me to ambient too, is that you hear these arrangements in your head and you can do it all yourself. What are some of the evolution of the techniques and the electronics and the gear that allowed you to fulfill that dream?
Well, there's an artist who goes by the name of Vera Unis, and he lived in my hometown of Pekin, and he actually helped me back in 2000 set up a computer. And back then it was Sonic Foundry Acid and Sonic Foundry Soundforge, and you know, I had a special sound card, you know, so I started this with the PC. And if I sat in front of a big analog module thing, I would be totally like, you know, it just like, what am I supposed to do with this? You know, I came into this in the digital age. I started, you know, in the probably like, I want to say 2000, 2001 is when I started you know, recording music with, you know, keyboards and stuff. So, I mean, it's been a long time. It's been, and so those were the tools, the software tools, and then later the VST plugins and things like that, you know, the things that emulate all the stuff that the gear nerds have, I guess. And then also, you know, I never had the budget to go out and buy all the synthesizers. So, you know, for me, it was easier to, you know, just get the plugins and things, which I feel like are great now, you know, like I love, a lot of the stuff like Spectrasonics and Native Instruments and Slate Ash, and there's all these amazing companies now that make these really cool tools that have evolved in time. So I feel like as technology evolves and gets better, so do the tools that, you know, I'm able to use to make this music, to get the ideas out of my head.
I understand what you mean too. I mean, it's just gotten where there's sampling real, you know, they're sampling actual choirs and actual string players and stuff now, you know, because of that, you know. And Philip, I wanted to ask that question to you too, as far as like, you know, your journey in music and then into electronic music and ambient styles.
One of the things that I remember very distinctly when I was very young, and we're talking about maybe like 6-7 years old, my parents, this was around 1966, 67, my parents contacted a man by the name of Mr. Bennett, who built component stereo systems. At this point in time, you could not just walk into a store and buy a stereo system and bring it home and turn it on. And he hand built the tuner, the disc player, you know, the record player, and the amplifier, and hand picked the speakers, and brought this all into our house and soldered it all together, and actually built, you know, the boards and put it into the cabinet and everything right in front of us. And then, rather than playing records, he got to records eventually, but he started off with reel-to-reel tape. Mm. And one of the first things that he played was an artist by the name of Mantovani, which you might have to go and look up. But yeah.
His strings, Mantovani strings.
Yes, these like spine-chilling strings. And, you know, here I am, 6 years old, and with these massive speakers in front of me, and listening to these strings. And it was just like, man, I was just like totally absorbed in that environment. And so when computers and synthesizers came along and you could put them together, I always thought, you know, man, those string sounds, I want to play those string sounds and really, you know, come up with something that sounds like that very emotional, you know, pull and tug and just really draws you in. So that was probably my you know, the genesis of my becoming interested in sound and sound manipulation and so on.
Yeah, you know, that's something that when you mentioned that, it just makes me think like the strings become like at your fingertips. you don't have the baton, you've got the synthesizer.
And there was something about that sound too that was very transporting. You know, it just totally took you out of your self to listen to some of that music. And then, of course, you know, as a teenager, I had two older brothers, and they listened to everything from Led Zeppelin to Yes to you know, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and the Beach Boys. And the harmonies, you know, were just, you know, we're just totally intrigued by the harmonies. And of course, we did, when I was growing up, we went to church and we sang a cappella, and we would sing the harmonies and the parts. And, you know, some of those church hymns, especially, like I think about some of the Christmas hymns, like Oh Holy Night, you know, where the strings feature very prominently and the voices and are very, very prominent in the choruses and so on. And so chorus sounds were also very intriguing to me when we got to VSTs and so on. And I went through a phase very similar to Chris, where I was just collecting every VST that I could, you know, possibly find. And then I went through more of a kind of a hardware phase with, I kind of fell in love with Access virus synthesizers and Yamaha synthesizers and blending those sounds together from analog synthesizers, and had a lot of fun with that. And, you know, just basically turning on the recorder and improvising and playing for hours and hours and hours, and then going back and extracting pieces from that and saying, yeah, that really works together well, you know. And then, you know, mp3.com started releasing it, and then Bandcamp came along and started releasing it, and worked with Daryl Bergen over at Earth Mantra. And he just sort of, you know, like took me by the hand and said, yeah, come on, Phil, you know, we're gonna record music, and we're gonna record your music and promote it. And so that's how it all took off.
With the VSTs and stuff, you didn't have to worry about having to buy like thousands of dollar synthesizers, you know?
Yeah, you know, I mean, someday I'm sure that I'll cross that bridge, you know, like right now. I mean, I have some hardware synths, but I really only use a MIDI controller keyboard, and I have a ton, and I mean a ton of plugins. You know, and as technology evolves, you know, the plugins get more expensive. So, but I feel like, you know, they do a lot of stuff. I don't really feel like I'm lacking. But then on the other hand, I can see why people enjoy just setting up a recorder and not staring at a computer screen all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think I would enjoy that. Just being able to, you know, set up a delay and a reverb and then have something going on a, you know, a patch or whatever that I can just tweak. And I'm not, you know, looking at the computer and messing with, you know, filters and knobs on the computer screen. So I think someday that you're going to see me integrate more hardware in with my studio setup. I think that's coming.
I think one of the things about it is, no, I understand exactly what you're talking about. I think one of the things about it, and one of the things about actually starting this podcast last year, was finding that there were different artists, and Steve Roach was one of them, where they were liking to record in real time. They were liking to just have everything rolling in the room and recording. And during the summertime, I got out my Fostex 8-track flash drive recorder and was recording it in that, not in the computer.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
You know, instead of going into the interface, you know?
Right. Something with computers, you know, there's the latency, and then you have to edit things. And, you know, it's nice to be able to record as you hear it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of times, even when I'm using software synths, I'm bouncing my audio into like Audacity or something, you know, like I'll have a lot of things set up, and then I have all the audio dump into one recorder.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a Tascam, or sometimes it might be like Audacity or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I like to be able to record things as I hear it, right when it happens.
It makes you feel like it was making me feel like I was recording a performance, even though I was just performing in the studio.
I see.
You know what I mean? Like I had to kind of make sure that this level was right. I had to make sure this was done, like you'd be in a performance. And so I think that was something that was, you know, I was getting from this podcast, that some people were doing that to be able to have everything kind of rolling in the room, is what I was thinking. You know, everything's kind of going
That's
on
cool.
in the room.
So you kind of sound check and then you just let it rip.
Yeah. Yeah. And just kind of edit out the best bits, you know, and into it like that. I don't know. With like radio broadcasting, a big shift in the way shows were produced is that there were the linear programs that were done in real time, and there were the non-linear programs that weren't done in real time. And so like here at the station, you know, we have actually two hosts, the new one that came in, that they're both doing their show in real time. They're sitting down with compact disc and compact disc and records, and they're basically doing the show, CD players, turntables into Adobe. And if they mess up, we make clips after, or they have to start something over. And then we have some that drop all the files in, and everything's just being moved around the multi-track. And the thing about it is, when we first started doing it, you know, the first thing was, oh, we get to make the sausage faster. Oh, this is great. Oh, we can churn these things out. And then sometimes you would find one of those hosts doing the show linear because they wanted to listen to the music while it was playing, and they wanted to crossfade it and on a board instead of crossfade it later with a mouse. And, you know, I don't know. It just became kind of a time saver, but then also it became just a whole different thing on its own. So
that's neat.
But, and it's still kind of, we still have, you know, kind of both ways of producing the program. So, But thank you for joining me back on that. And I wanted to ask y'all to choose a song to talk about, and I'll edit that in the editing process of that. If there's a particular one you want to, you know, point out and kind of why, maybe highlighting a little excerpt of that piece of music into the podcast. Who want to start first? I know. Well, I already was going to go into Faring Forward and then Unbroken Devotion. Those were two that I had notes here to go into. But who would like to just, you know, start with choose another one and kind of lead into it?
I'll start with Evening's Embrace.
Okay.
Is one of my favorites, and also Distant Vistas. And I have this massive ambient playlist that I listen to, you know, and sometimes I'm listening to it and then I realize, hey, that's that's me and Chris. That's one of our songs that nice. We recorded, you know? And it's like, wow, that sounds so good. And it fits in so well. But I think Evening's Embrace has that warmth to it, but it also has that edginess to it that I like. So that's one of my favorites on there, along with Distant Vistas.
You know,
and of course, Faring Forward is I think is the bomb track on there, you know.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites. I love it. I just love the way this record ends. It's a beautiful track to end on. It's really nice.
I think that's going to be a good way and a bit to if people get a foreshadowing or not to close the podcast with, I think is Faring Forward. I'd like to give the audience a taste of Evening's Embrace and also Distant Vistas on Tones and Drones.
And I also would like to add my other favorite on this would be, I think, Deep Lane.
Okay.
That one for me, I remember having an anxiety attack. That's what I get once in a while. And that track just really calmed me down. You know what I mean? Nice. So, yeah, nice. It just really hit a sweet spot. And it was a really, really nice place to be immersed in while it was evolving. So,
you know, good. Okay, we'll put that one into up that kind of taper off into there. And you know, something about the music coming back on the podcast, something about this is like creating these soundscapes. I mean, there's I usually ask people the question, like, what do you creating the music, what does it do for you, and what do you intend to do it? What do you intend the audience to take from it, and what is it for you? Because I like to ask the personal part, because you can create music that can be a meditation and a therapy for yourself. And we've seen that here on the podcast. And I think the audience has gotten different perspectives on that. But I like to ask that question, leaning off what you said, Chris, you know, it's like creating music that can be your own solace, your own meditation, your own relaxation, your own excitement. I mean, it runs the gamut of emotions. And so I kind of wanted to ask you about that, about what the process of creating the music is for you. And what are some of the things that you'd like to kind of send out there to those other people that are catching the sounds?
You know, place of solace, you know, a place to, you know, kind of escape, especially now, especially with everything that's going on. I really feel like this music should, you know, be more in the forefront with people because it's nice just to tune out all the noise. And right now there's a lot of noise. Yeah. And I feel like this type of music is needed more than probably ever in my life. So I feel, you know, really fortunate, you know, to be, you know, where I'm at now, you know, as an artist, and being able to work with someone like Philip, who, you know, his earlier works, you know, really inspired me to continue down this path. And yeah, it's just, that's it really. It's just to put good vibes out there, you know, like I feel like where we're at now, I like to do darker ambient, but where we're at now, I feel more drawn to either be in a lighter side or a grayer side of things. You know, I don't really think that I would ever do like an album that's dedicated to 3 a.m. challenges in an abandoned asylum, you know? I mean, I might do that kind of record down the road, you know what I mean?
It's seasonal sometimes. Yeah. So, Philip, I'd like to ask you the same question too. What has been your journey, you know, and the process of creating the music, and then something that you kind of set an intention to send out to the audience that's listening to it in any way that they find it nowadays, in so many more ways that they find it, right?
Overall, my musical career, the main intent has been to be a source of peace or a source of comfort, or maybe just, hey, breathe and relax, or breathe and go to sleep, and feel like, you know, you're wrapped in this ambient blanket, and you're safe, and you're warm, and you're peaceful, and you're in a kind of a state of meditative serenity. Most of the time when I am composing or just improvising. I am meditating. I'm meditating while I'm creating, or maybe creation is meditating. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult for me to even try to describe it. But I do definitely go to a very conscious, aware place where the music just starts to flow. And I don't always feel like I create it. I feel like sometimes it's channeled through me. I have had that experience where it feels like I am not doing this. There's a greater power or a creator or a greater presence that is playing me and creating this music through me. And I think collaboratively, you know, that could be Chris and I, you know, working together as well, that same spirit and that same presence is able to take, you know, what I've done and what Chris is able to do. And that meditative or creative process is blending those sounds together as well.
Yeah. I've had those moments too, Philip, where I feel like a tuning fork or some kind mm-hmm. of, mm-hmm. I know what I'm talking about. It's really like tapping into some type of creative energy or current. And, yes. And it's just been an ongoing thing for probably the last 10 years for me, especially, you know, where it's like, sometimes I need to step away from it. I take breaks, but they're always pretty short. You know, I always feel the draw to go back in. I can't stay away from creating music for too long because I like to be in that flow. I like to be plugged into that current.
One of the things I hope that my music expresses is that it projects that meditative sense of serenity and peace and calmness. And I'm kind of always on the search or listening, you know, for that. Oh yeah, that sounds like the experience.
Yeah, that sounds like the experience. That sounds like the experience of that you could talk about that creative energy tapping into while you're making it.
Yes. Yeah, I hope that you know
that out there. Yeah,
what Philip and I are able to do, you know, I hope that translates into the listener. You know, I hope that they can tap into that. To that flow, to that zone too, you know, because like I said earlier, I just feel like that's just really needed now, especially if you're looking to, you know, block out all the noise that's around, you know, all the things that are happening. It's definitely a good place to go and escape in. So yeah. It's nice to have a vehicle to be able to you know, be able to have a way to put this out there for people.
Yeah, and appreciate y'all doing that and being on and talking about Tones and Drones on the podcast. And and y'all are welcome back with the new album. I would love to have y'all back for the new record to be able to give the listeners some conversation and also some pieces of that record too to inspire them to go and find it. And where are some places I like to ask this too, where are some places to go that people can find the music right now? You mentioned you're on the Spotted Peccary label, which I'm a big fan here on the show.
Mm-hmm. You can find it at Bandcamp, Apple Music, Spotify, Deezer, all the major digital outlets.
Okay.
Amazon.
Yeah, same for me too. All those places that Philip talked about. And I think my Bandcamp site, it's probably the most, for me personally, it's got everything on it. I've been on a lot of compilations. I've done different collaborative records with different artists. There are some self-release stuff on there. It's not all through different labels. And I think that's probably, you know, that and maybe on Spotify is where you'd find the most of my stuff in one place, is Bandcamp or Spotify.
Okay, very cool. And thank y'all for being here on this program. And I'd like to as I lead us out, I want to play a bit of a faring forward to as we move onward and forward into this new year. So thank you guys for being the first guests of this new year, and really appreciate it.
Awesome. Glad to be here. Thank you very much, Jason.
Oh, you're very welcome.
It's been fun. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Well, I'll send an email out to the podcast links whenever the podcast is published, and the podcast is on Spotify and Apple and Google and NPR One and Anchor and a couple of, and several other smaller platforms. So
speaking of NPR, there is a track from Vague Traces on Hearts of Space this week.
Nice.
Yes, and the theme.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the awesome. Theme. The theme of the show was isolationist ambient, and we're very well positioned in that program.
What track are they playing, Phil?
Let's see. I believe they included.
Let's see here.
Unbroken Devotion.
Oh hell yeah. That's awesome.
That's fantastic. Man,
that's a weird one. When, you know, Hearts of Space is one of the reasons why I even started this whole thing. So to have, oh man, it's just a weird feeling, you know? It's just awesome.
To be on the show. That's cool.
That's and cool. I think one of the really nice things about this album is that you can listen to it on, if you listen to it uninterrupted, there are no interruptions in it. It just, it flows from one track to the next, and there's nothing abrupt or sudden, or, you know, any sound drops or anything like that to really interrupt the flow of it. Okay. And I think that's part of what helps enhance it as well. So it's definitely in that drone category of, you know, let us lull you with these drones and relax with us.
Thanks again for doing this. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Hey, no problem, man. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah, nice to meet y'all.
Thanks again to my guests on this episode of Tones and Drones, Philip Wilkerson and Chris Russell. The album is called Dark Measures, and you can find out more information about it at spottedpeccary.com and also at ambientelectronic.bandcamp.com, which is Spotted Peccary's presence on the Bandcamp website. Closing the program with a selection called Faring Forward from the Dark Measures album. I'd also like to remind you that you can find Tones and Drones on your favorite podcast platform, also on the NPR One app. There is a companion piece to the program, the Tones and Drones radio show, which airs on KVLU on Sundays at 10 p.m. Central Time. And you can stream KVLU at kvlu.org. I'm Jason Miller. Thanks for listening to Tones and Drones. Please subscribe to the program on your favorite podcast platform. And if there's a place to leave a review, I'd appreciate that as well. Until the next episode, may music bring you peace and joy.